Sergeant Spikey never did this before. All his old high school friends were rallied around him. The political theory guy was there too, kind of running the show. They were out in the middle of Spikey's dad's sorghum field, and everybody was practicing their Johnny Rebel whoop, real excited and all. Everybody had their secret armband on. Being a former Marine and all, Spikey used to want to have the few, the proud stitched on the secret armband for sentimental reasons. But the political theory guy said no, it would infringe upon the United States law of copyrights. The secret armband was yellow ribbon that Mama Maybell sewed. They called themselves the Hostages for Freedom. That was their club name. It was a real nice, pretty Saturday morning for stuff to be shooting out of the ground. Spikey squatted down just for 1 second to see if there was any new Milo shoots coming up that the guys might be trampling a few of. So his head and ears were down among everybody else's knees and hips, and he couldn't listen real close, and he missed the first part of the political theory guy's warmer upper speech. That's what these speeches were called, warmer uppers. There was some creepy socialist foreigners or somebody like that, except Spikey didn't get to hear the name the foreigners was called. The political theory guy was saying, they can't disguise their rat's nest with an American name. Wheatville? What do they take us for? They're nothing but a bunch of wheat nicks. The political theory guy must have figured it would be a hoot to call the foreigners wheat nicks. He wasn't a farming man like the rest of them, not even a Nebraskan. He was brought in from the Wasatch Mountains or someplace like that way out west, so he didn't know any better. None of the guys, including Spikey, liked that joke. They was all called wheat heads when they rode into places like Lincoln and met up with the city slickers. The political theory guy waited a second after he said wheat nicks, but he didn't get any Johnny Rebel whoops. That was the only pause he made in his warmer upper speech that didn't get them, though. He said, these foreigners have skin that is exceptionally thick and sallow and greasy. If you were to take an acetylene torch to their faces, it would have little or no effect. Pause and whoops. This morning was going to be their first time out of their hometown of Kiev, Nebraska, on a road trip altogether, like a club. It was going to be a kind of warm-up maneuver to warm the Hostages for Freedom up for some real business someday in the future with M-16s and frag grenades and flamethrowers and everything up in the hills someplace. An all-out war on the humanists. That's what the scuttlebutt was, except Spikey didn't know whether he believed the guns and grenades and flamethrowers part. Even though this was just a warm-up, the political theory guy had brung his big old milk can in the back of the official truck for the ceremonial drink, and also his fancy tape deck for the ceremonial polka music. The guys didn't like the drink, but they sure liked the polka music. The Hostage for Freedom and all the other young regular guys from these parts of Nebraska liked polkas better than any other brand of music, including acid rock and C&W, because polkas was fun to party to and also reminded you of your rich cultural heritage. Everybody lined up, already making secret gross-out faces and Ralph noises because they had to drink the ceremonial drink, but the political theory guy told everybody to don't fool around because it was real important. Genghis Khan fed his Mongol hordes on raw mare's milk, and they were the greatest, most courageous fighting force Asia has ever seen. Drink to Genghis Khan. Dingus gone? Whispered some joker in back. Whose dingus is gone? Not mine, yelled somebody else, and he proved it. They all practiced their Johnny Rebel whoop some more, just like when they were kids in the locker room back at Kiev High School, just rowdy butts out of control long ago. This ticked the political theory guy off, you could tell, but he swallowed it. He rushed everybody up to the can to dipper themselves out a couple mouthfuls of this real watery white stuff he swore up and down was genuine mare's milk. Druther have something like Kool-Aid, moaned a few of the guys as they reached the head of the line. It seemed real important to the political theory guy that they did the ceremony just right, in seriousness, with each Hostage for Freedom getting two mouthfuls and no more, no less. Then they all had to kneel around the official truck in a circle for prayer. The political theory guy turned down the polka some, and he spoke the prayer. Our Lord in heaven, We ask it of thy holy grace to bless this vehicle, that it may speed us on our quest with great swiftness, and we ask it of thee to grant us the steadfastness of faith to carry out our appointed task with all dispatch and vigor, and we do it in the name of thy Son, our Lord and Mediator and Advocate, Christ Jesus, who liveth and reigneth with thee, now and forevermore, and always. Some of the guys said, Amen, and started climbing up into the truck, but the political theory guy gave the special nod, so Spikey dashed around and pulled them back down to their knees because the ceremony wasn't over just yet. It was time for the brief silent vigil, the period of quietude and contemplation while their stomachs had time to digest the ceremonial drink. This was the part where Spikey's shoulders and pecs felt like they were growing about a foot in diameter each, and his heart got all glorious and sad for America because she was losing respect the world over. His body and brain kind of swelled up in the hot, breezy silence of his dad's field, and he relived some of the weird good times back in Tehran, like as though they were happening to him right now, so vivid they were, back when he was still a U.S. Marine and a hostage of the students in Iran. Like the time he learned to count to 10 in Parsi. This little piggy had roast beef. This little piggy went wee, 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 wee. Except Spikey had to change it into a goat, because Iranians don't cotton to no pigs. The other guys must have felt swell too, because all it took was one little bitty whispered amen from the political theory guy, and they were all up in that truck, 30 strong, raring to go. Gosh, Sergeant Spikey, do you think we'll see any action today? Will there be any fighting, Sergeant Spikey? It was a kid, not much more than a boy, really, and he was tugging Spikey's secret yellow armband. He was a little scared, which was okay as long as it didn't jeopardize the maneuver. Spikey looked at him good before answering the question. He was handsome and dark, real little, and had big black eyes like this one kid back in Tehran who used to be Spikey's friend in a secret way that he never talked to nobody about. This kid on the truck today had good, tight muscles all around him, like an Iranian, except he was American all the way. He even went to Kiev High School, where Spikey himself was graduated, along with all the other hostages for freedom. So Spikey decided to kind of try to take a load off the kid's mind and tell him the truth, just as he was told it by the political theory guy. He put his hand on the kid's smooth shoulder and tried to make his voice go low and strong like Audie Murphy always did back in those fine old black and white movies. Spikey never did like his own voice because it was too dang high. No, kid, he said, no action today. We're just going to go riding in and talk mean to some foreigners for a little while. Put them in the right place, that's all. You stick close nearby me and act like I act like and you'll be okay. Gee, thanks a lot, Sergeant Spikey, said the kid, smiling up at him real admiring-like, broad and wide open and handsome now. Everybody whooped and turned up the polkas and yelled like Johnny Rebels all the way across the flat lands of the Nebraskan Panhandle, from Kiev to Wheatville, farther than any of them, except the political theory guy and Spikey, had ever went in their whole life before. Before he got down off the truck on the outskirts of Wheatville, Spikey climbed up on top of the roof of the cab and looked around at what kind of land the foreigners were farming. That's what the political theory guy said they were, most of them. Small family farmers, just like Spikey's dad. It looked like they probably used little bitty one- and two-man combines to get right into the nooks and crannies of each of their fields. These folks really utilized the land efficient, unlike the giant conglomeration corporations that utilize huge monster machines to drive people like the Hostages for Freedom and the Wheatniks out of business, off their land, and onto welfare rolls in shame all across the countryside. The other guys piled off the truck and played a little grab-ass down in the normal-looking Wheatville dust. But Spikey paused a while on top of the cab some more. He was feeling good and strong in his shoulders and pectorals from the dingus gone Kool-Aid. He breathed deep and looked out across the foreigners' land to see how it was planted. From the colors he tried to guesstimate what percentage soy, what popcorn, what millet, and what winter wheat was out there. Look at all these wide open spaces growing around this one little bitty lonesome town. It was the kind of scenery that he used to miss the most back in the embassy compound in Iran. This town won't be worth sour owl manure when we come rolling back out, whooped one of his buddies. Yeah, whooped another, we're going to make these foreigners lay down in the gutter and bite the curb and stomp on their head. The handsome dark kid looked up at Spikey with a real scared look in his pretty eyes. Yeah, yeah, said Spikey to nobody in particular. The county sheriff and a whole bunch of state troopers was parked out here on the outskirts, sitting on the hoods of their patrol cars with their two-way radios off. They had breakfast from McDonald's, Egg McMuffins and sausages and Cokes and good stuff like that, plus cold beers paid for by the Hostages for Freedom Dues Fund. They were cheering Spikey. So it must be a parade they were doing today. Spikey had been wondering. He remembered that the political theory guy said something about parades, something about his good elder brother or somebody, who was so mighty that he'd be able to call off the few law enforcement guys in these parts that might object to unlicensed demonstrations by private paramilitary social clubs. The political theory guy drove the official truck real slow down the middle of Main Street, while the guys marched real proud and stately alongside. It seemed like a regular enough Main Street, except it was all deserted. That was strange for a Saturday morning in farm country, and all the store signs were wrote in a weird language that no Iranian or American in their right mind ever saw. It was a clean Main Street, too, for these parts. Hardly any horse shit. The political theory guy had the loudspeakers on, and he was saying some really mean stuff just to scare the foreigners a little. Hide your daughters, godless pagans of Wheatville, he yelled. He don't mean it, said Spikey, winking at his little pal. We're just trying to scare 'em because they've been getting too uppity, thinking they can buy land outside their own territory, that's all. He let the kid walk a little closer. The political theory guy sometimes talked himself out a tad too far on the limb, in Spikey's view. He was tall and muscular and about Spikey's same age and in real good shape, except he moved kind of stiff, especially down around that part of a man where good marriages are made and not in heaven, if you take the drift, as Spikey's dad used to say when Mama Maybell was in town shopping and he got a little too much cough syrup in his iced tea. And although the political theory guy yelled a lot and said things about blow-torching people's faces, he always kept his voice sort of flat and dead somehow. But the other Hostages for Freedom didn't seem to take much notice of his weird voice. They liked to hear him talk and really got their patriotism rallied up around Spikey when they heard the warmer-upper speeches, so it must be okay. Spikey was the mascot, the symbol, the walking insignia, and the martial arts instructor also. That's how come they called themselves the Hostages for Freedom, because Spikey used to be a hostage over in Iran and all that. He was the famous one, kind of. He was the one responsible for their actions. That's what the political theory guy said. Sometimes Spikey wished he'd never got taken hostage at all in the first place, or if he did get took hostage, that he'd never got sent free. He seemed like he grew a whole lot older than all his friends during that hitch in Iran, a lot more older than just a year's worth plus 2 months. Maybe that's why he couldn't get as rallied up as everybody else. Maybe he was just too dang old to get rallied up much anymore. The political theory guy stuck his head out the truck window and screamed a word that he taught the guys a long time ago in an early doctrine session. It was a signal word that Spikey had forgot all about because he didn't think they'd ever use it. Kristallnacht, screamed the political theory guy, and all the Hostages for Freedom heard the signal word and got them some bricks out of the back of the truck. Nobody was in the shops. The people must have been all out doing their chores, which is where Spikey should be right now today, haying, except his mama gave him permission to come here, even though it was Saturday. Saturday was a big old day back home, and Spikey had a lot of haying to do and other chores. As the shop window glass flew, he thought about his chores back home. But soon he didn't want to do his chores anymore because things started happening that was awful, but also sort of interesting in a way that he'd never want to tell nobody in his family about. Spikey never did this before. He never just swaggered into stores and took what pleased his eye. It was exciting inside his stomach to do such a thing. In the drugstore, he reached into a bashed display case and got a little silver chain with a nice 2-triangle star. It was like a souvenir for Mama Maybelle to put around her neck and make herself fancy with. Spikey didn't ever think that he was ever going to give another woman another souvenir nor memento again, not after his favorite cousin Shanny walked off with a fat old humanist wearing the special hostage pin that Spikey gave her. But this was different. This was for Mama. He was feeling excited to be inside a store that was supposed to be closed now. Ever since he was a little bitty runt, he always wondered what the heck went on inside of stores after they got closed. He felt chills like a kid, except he was a kid with giant swelling pecs and shoulders. He put his mama's new chain around his little dark-eyed buddy's neck when the other guys weren't looking. It was just an innocent-type gesture. When they come out of the drugstore, the political theory guy was out of the truck, real excited, jumping up and down in the street. He was looking for Spikey. "Come, Sergeant Spikey, former hostage of communism, symbol of resuscitated Americanism, figurehead of the Hostages for Freedom, lead us into the infidel shrine." The political theory guy pointed at a big building next door to the drugstore with a stained glass window that showed no Jesus or anybody or anything but curlicues and more double triangles. "What," said Spikey, "you want me to bash the door in?" "If you please." "Yeah, Spike, well, use some of that good old USMC regulation jiu-jitsu stuff you've been trying to teach us," yelled one of the boys. So Spikey did. He saw a bunch of foreigners in there. They were weird. They went to church on Saturday. The political theory guy stuck his head in the door and yelled another special signal word. It must have become his favorite in the past couple hours or so because he was yelling it a lot. Spikey never heard it before today. "Pogrom!" yelled the political theory guy, and all the old and young and in-between foreigners jumped about a half a mile out of their pews and scattered in every direction in a cloud of beanies and granny shawls. There was no women in church. They must have been home baking the ham and making the potato salad, because maybe there was a big old outdoors party in Wheatville today, like sometimes on Sunday back in Kiev, when the women shooed their men to prayer meeting so they wouldn't be in the way. The political theory guy swaggered up to the front, pushed the bearded minister aside, reached into a special dent in the wall, and pulled out an old fancy carved wooden box. He smashed it against a pagan altar and gathered up the stuff that was inside, which was a bunch of things rolled up and covered in cloth and strung with silver bells that made little celebration sounds. The political theory guy ripped off the covers and pulled out a pile of old rolled up pieces of paper with hand scribbling on them. He tried to read them because he was a real educated guy and liked to read everything he could lay his hands on, especially what he called perditious literature, to find out the bad stuff people shouldn't think so he could tell the Hostages for Freedom not to think about it. But it looked like these scrolls were wrote in the same weird foreign talk as on the stores outside, and so the political theory guy couldn't make head nor tail out of them, and he couldn't get no political theory out of them. So he got kind of weird and cool mad, and he started slowly pulling cold gray garden slugs of snot out of his nose and laying them on the papers. This made the minister go kind of nuts and start yelling, so the political theory guy nodded to one of Spikey's old classmates, and Spikey's old classmate punched the wind out of the minister with his new steel-toed engineering boots, all shiny and black, that he got in the bootery across the street, because they fit him perfect. And he had odd-shaped feet, this classmate of Spikey's, ever since high school, and all the guys used to kid him in gym because he had to play b-ball barefoot because sneakers give him some blisters. Then some of the boys came running up from the basement. "We found their daughters hid in the furnace room," they screamed in voices so wild and happy that Spikey felt strange inside and couldn't explain why. The political theory guy started laughing real mean. He said, "The fools thought we'd never look for their bitches in here. They thought we'd play by the same heathen rules as they. Well, we don't. Go ahead and detain them."
"Detain them?"
"Yes.
Can we interrogate him too?"
"Of course." The boys all ran downstairs cheering. Spikey wondered what was going on in the street. He went outside to see what was happening out there in the street. He fell in with a bunch of other guys going in another direction. Spikey didn't want to hear or think about the screams that echoed up from the foreigner church's basement. The guys were swaggering out in front of a car that was trying either to escape town or get in. The town was so teensy you couldn't tell which, just like Kiev, except in Kiev you sort of knew where everybody was headed because you knew everybody. They pulled an old foreigner out of the car and commenced interrogating him. The political theory guy came running out of the church after them. It seemed like he knew this old foreigner already. He screamed, "Look at his hands! Look at his hands! Hold them up in the sunshine for all to see. They're soft. He is no farmer. Look at the literature in his back seat. Look at the university sticker on his bumper. He must be a stranger, an outside agitator." The political theory guy pulled a box of little books, sort of like fat pamphlets, out of the back seat. They were literature-type books, without pictures, like an English class, Spikey's worst subject. "He's here to distribute liberal, pernicious literature," screamed the political theory guy. "Detain him, hostages." Spikey said, "Hadn't we ought to be messing around with a teacher?" He was remembering all the whippings he got in school, as far as he got in school. "Trotsky and all those monsters were professors," said the political theory guy. "Interrogate him." Spikey sort of looked away, and he saw a naked girl come out of the church. She was holding her dark-haired crotch in both hands and wandering along the sidewalk, mumbling and crying and bleeding a bit like a person after a car wreck they'd been in. The political theory guy saw her, too. He made weird little gaspy chuckles in his throat. He sat down on the steps of what looked like the courthouse, crossed his legs, and started bouncing them up and down. His mouth and eyes got all drooly and trembly like a wolf's, and he opened up one of the foreigner's pernicious pamphlets. As he read, he sometimes glanced down the street at the naked girls that were being pushed out of the church one by one now. They seemed to make him lick his fingertip and turn the glossy pages faster. The political theory guy liked to read everything he could lay his hands on. Spikey couldn't talk at first. Finally, when he could, his language came out old style, like his dad's on the few occasions the two of them ever spoke. Spikey didn't know why, but he said real old-fashioned like this, "Them fellers really hadn't ought to be doing that there to them poor little gals." The political theory guy got a mean look when he heard that, and he yelled, "Tell me you never did it to a heifer in junior high, Sergeant Spikey. Then tell me, with your heart's deepest honesty, which possesses more relative value in the real world, a strong, fine milk cow, or one of these poorly proportioned, sallow-skinned wretches?" Spikey figured that part of the conversation was closed. He didn't like to talk dirty like that. A bunch of the hostages for freedom, who'd been helping interrogate the old white-bearded foreigner guy, saw the bare-naked girls, and they whooped and started going to chase them down side streets and across fields. Other guys were leaving in groups of two or three to disarm and subdue the handful of foreigner men that was peeking out of their houses with hoes and pitchforks and stupid little 22 carbines in their hands, like what you go sparrow hunting with when you're a kid, penny per head. Soon, only two or three or four guys were left with Spikey. They were taking turns trying to pop the old liberal's nose bridge up inside his brain, like Spikey taught them how to do in hand-to-hand combat class. The hits made loud, echoey sounds up inside the foreigner's sinus passage, noises so loud that they caught the attention and drew back a few of the girl chasers from clear across the street. "Let me congratulate you, Sergeant Spikey," the political theory guy was saying. He tugged Spikey's secret armband. "Your fame is seeping gradually into the left-wing America's consciousness through the liberal media. This seditious journal has a story about you." Spikey was surprised. "Me in another magazine? My name and all? I thought that part was over." He wanted to try to read it for old time's sake, but if there was any big words, he'd need a whole afternoon to fight through them. He turned to get him a copy for later, and jumped about a mile in the air in startlement when a little bitty gal runs screaming by all butt naked. She was real pretty, and her butt was firm and wide open and light brown and pink inside, a ringer for his favorite cousin Shanny. He thought it was his favorite cousin Shanny, and that's how come he jumped in startlement. He watched three guys tackle her face down in the broken glassy asphalt. Spikey thought of his cousin Shanny and her fat old socialists shacking up in a trailer, doing their dirty bits of business and contaminating the proud militaristic grounds of Fort Carson, just when Spikey had almost went to first base with her, showed her the goods at least. It made him feel crazy. He'd been so close to getting for the first time in his life the one thing that all regular guys want the most. "Hey, Spikewell, we can't do this old fart's nose right. Show us how to do it like a real Marine guy ought to." They stood the old communist up and propped him up against the telephone pole, his bleeding face aimed back at the right angle for Spikey. The old guy was short, a normal height, not too tall like Shanny's fat secular humanist was. "For this, God will curse your children and your grandchildren," the old guy kept whispering all bubbly through the blood. Spikey knew the boys were just acting nutty, like they used to do when they was all butt naked and towel snapping in the locker room back at Kiev High School before or after a b-ball game, and their bare nuts was flapping loose and big and crazy in the towel breeze, big brave nuts making the guys all move together at once, light and crazy on their bare feet. So many different brands of nuttiness were rubbing off on him now, and he couldn't help it, but he was so scared and he was laughing. "You got to do a countdown like old Larry Welk before he rips into one of them fine old polkas," said Spikey. He talked loud and important and did him a karate do dance so some of the gal chasers might hear and turn around and come back to watch the big Lawrence Welk polka show. "A one," Spikey was screaming now. "A two! A three!" The old man went down slow and easy. He had a peacefuller expression under his cottony whiskers than Spikey ever saw or would ever hope to see again, except on old spaniel dogs asleep on the porch after the big autumn duck hunt, and their breathing so gentle it hardly flutters the pin feathers woven among their whiskers with bits of dried blood. The hostages for freedom did Johnny Rebel whoops and fell on the old guy and began stripping him of everything but his natural attached teeth. And at that moment, Spikey first noticed the whimpering sound that seemed like it might have been going on at his elbow for a long while. It was his little Iranian-like buddy. With the first really big gush of blackish foreign blood into the Wheatville dust, his whimper turned into a scream. It was a real high, pretty, girlish scream. The kid ran between two buildings and started off across the alfalfa field in the direction of home, taking half a barbed wire fence with him. A horrible look suddenly twisted the political theory guy's non-Nebraskan face, so Spikey yelled louder than he'd ever yelled except a couple times back in the embassy compound with the cattle prods being jammed where they shouldn't. "Stop! Coward! Deserter! Traitor! You come on back here!" The political theory guy reached for a magnum that he had concealed under his shirt tail and real calm-like exploded the kid's shoulder blades about 30 feet in the air, spinning and flipping in two different directions like red and white twin boomerangs. And it was then that Sergeant Spikewell J. Wamsutter knew he would be a hostage for freedom for as long as he lived.